If you were to lose the negative victim mindset, what else would you lose? You'd lose all the likes, you'd lose all the comments, you'd lose all the DMs, you'd lose all the support. So maybe that will land if you're out there. What else would you lose if you got rid of that limiting belief, that victim mindset?
I have a very challenging, very direct comment that I think will be hard for some people. If you were to actually become successful, would you have to lose all of your unsuccessful friends?
Welcome to Next Level University. I am your host, Kevin Palmieri.
And I am your host, Alan Lazarus.
At Next Level University, we believe in a heart-driven, but no BS approach to holistic self-improvement for entrepreneurs.
We bring you 7 episodes a week, 6 of which are solo episodes with Kevin and myself, and one world-class guest to help you level up your life, your love, your health, and your wealth.
Self-improvement in your pocket, every day, from anywhere, for free. Welcome to Next Level University. Next Level Nation, welcome back to another very special, as always, episode of Next Level University, where we teach you how to level up your life, your love, your health, and your wealth. We hope you enjoyed our latest episode, last week's live Q&A. Today, for episode number 1068, happy Friday, 2 powerful questions that will change the way you think. Taryn and I are watching a documentary on a cult. And
that is a hell of an opening.
It's a hell of an opener. Most, and I won't say most, but many cults actually start with positivity and they start with self-improvement as the core, and then things kind of go off the rails and there's a power trip and all that happy jazz. But in the beginning of this cult, they were focused on self-improvement and they had really good questions that they would send out to their community. I'm just laughing because I told Taryn, I said, I promise we're not a cult. We're never going to be a cult. So everything's going to be fine. I'm not taking notes here. But this is one of the questions that they posed. Somebody in the group was sick. And this person said, you know, I've had this cough for like the last 6 months and I just can't seem to kick it. And I don't know what's going on. And the question that they asked, the question that they posed to this person was, if you are to lose your cough, what else do you lose? And the person thought about it and they said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, if your cough stops, what else stops in your life? And the person thought about it and they reflected and they said, oh, you know what? If my cough stops, the attention surrounding my sickness, quote unquote, stops as well. And maybe the love that I'm getting, maybe the support that I'm getting, maybe the attention that I'm getting, that would also stop. I think that is a wonderful question for you out there that you can use in a bunch of different scenarios. And I should have thought of this, Alan, before we started. I want to try to think of a scenario where you and I maybe would have benefited from that question.
Yeah.
The one that jumps to the page for me is, it's kind of a, yeah, it really is the same thing. When I stopped doing bodybuilding, this was hard for me. And I doubt it was for you, but this is my experience. When I stopped doing bodybuilding, particularly when I went from being very lean to bulking and trying to gain strength, I was hesitant because I knew I wouldn't be able to post pictures anymore. Pictures of me being like very lean with abs and veins and jacked. If I asked myself that question, okay, if you being lean goes away, what else goes away? It would have been attention. It would have been significance. It would have been probably those are the main two, I would say.
Because feeling I was comfortable posting, on camera.
You know? Feeling comfortable on camera.
Being lean on camera does feel good. It's the best. Yeah.
It's the best. Really nice.
And on the beach as well.
Yeah.
Things like
but
that.
If it's at the detriment of something else, which it for me, I think it was at that point in my life. But that
well,
question
can you go
really
into that
really
a little
helped
bit?
Me. I think in that, so it's interesting because I was quote unquote a bodybuilder and I was focused on bodybuilding, but throughout my entire prep for my show, which was 3 months, every single day working out, dieting, posing, sending pictures, sending check-ins, sending my weight, measuring every single thing I ate for three whole months, maybe more than that, I was getting leaner and leaner and leaner and leaner. And I was like, wow, I look really good. I look like these people on Instagram. I have abs. I have veins in my abs. I can see every single vein in my legs. Like, this is awesome. I'm enjoying this. And then at the end of that, when you start reversing that, it like really plays a tricks on your mind.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because you see that going away. So I think for me, it wasn't necessarily, I did this portion of the show. Now it's time to do the next portion for the next show, where you gain some weight, you gain some muscle, you look better the next time you do this. I think for me, it was like, if I give up this body, I give up everything I've worked for. I give up all the attention, all the significance, that part of my identity. I give up a lot of stuff if I do that. So I think that question would really help me.
Yeah, that question, honestly, really, really good question.
Yeah.
Emilia and I were talking recently. I want to share this as well. It's a little side tangent, quick. When you do a bodybuilding show, the bodybuilding show that I won, of the three fitness shows that I did, in a way, unless I do another bodybuilding show, or in my case, it was Men's Physique, but unless I do another fitness show and then shoot to win it, I'll never really look that good again. And that can mess with your head. Like, Kev, will you ever be that lean again?
Nope.
So imagine for the rest of Kevin's life, he has to go through life knowing he will never actually look that good again. It's like, it messes with you a little bit, because your set point of what it's like to be that lean is not sustainable. And now you have to like learn how to, it's almost like subconsciously you're always comparing to that old best that isn't really sustainable. And so it's really important for everyone to kind of understand that about success. And sometimes when you get a certain level of success, but you did it in a way that wasn't sustainable, you lock in on what that was like. And then it's like, you can't really sustain that, you know? Go ahead.
Well, even to this question, at least, yeah, I want to make sure I give like the premise of this question. You can kind of think of it this way. If I was to get rid of this negative, what potential or perceived positives would also go with it? So this is a question to help you break through being quote unquote stuck somewhere, where maybe you're, and I, one of the best examples, and I don't know if this is the case, but from what I've seen, I know like 5 years ago, there were many people on my social media who anytime I would see them post, it was always negative. Every single time they posted, it was something negative, and it was something that it was an attention grab. And the reason I say 5 years ago is I don't really follow many, or I'm not really friends with many people who are very negative, which I'm blessed and I'm grateful for that. And I don't really consume a lot of Facebook, honestly. But if you think about it from that perspective, if you were to lose the negative victim mindset, what else would you lose?
Right.
You'd lose all the likes, you'd lose all the comments, you'd lose all the DMs, you'd lose all the support. So maybe that will land if you're out there. What else would you lose if you got rid of that limiting belief, that victim mindset?
I have a very challenging, very direct comment that I think will be hard for some people. If you were to actually become successful, would you have to lose all of your unsuccessful friends? And I think that one of the reasons why I struggled with this fear of success is because if you really were to achieve your dreams, what would you lose? And the truth is, you might lose a lot of your friends. And that's so, so hard. That's a whole nother tangent. But this is a powerful question. Can you say it one more time?
Which one? The actual question?
Yeah. If you were to lose this cough, what else would you lose?
Yeah.
So if you were to lose being a quote unquote failure, what else would you lose? Meaning all of your other friends that are also failing.
Yep.
Because most of the time, the people that we've interviewed on the show that are extremely successful, most of their friends are also extremely successful. Like when we were at that Brendon Burchard event, it was like Tom Bilyeu, Brendon Burchard, Anthony Trucks, like all of them hang out and they all went to that mastermind thing, and they're all very, very, very successful, you know? So in a way, maybe my fear of success stemmed from the fear of losing my unsuccessful or less successful, I should say, friends. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that all of us should contemplate. Very powerful question, Kev. I'm not just saying that. I mean, Kev came to this recording session today with that question earlier. Super powerful.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Taryn has studied this. She loves like understanding cults. That's just something she enjoys. Like she loves understanding the psychology behind how it happens and all that. And right. She's like, do you want to watch this documentary? And I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. I mean, I'm into that stuff. But a lot of the personal development fundamentals are like really pretty good. it started off as like a really positive thing, and that's a great question. So,
well, that's how people get hoodwinked, because it starts off so positive.
Yeah.
And that's also why people think, you know, I remember we had one team member who their family thought we were a cult. Yeah. And they were like, oh, don't go to that. Well, it makes sense, because if some of the cults started off positive and then ended up going to the dark land, whatever we want to call it, or off the rails, for lack of better phrasing, it makes sense why people are fearful of that. Yeah. One more quick thing about this question of, like, if you were to give this up, this negative thing up, what else would you lose that might be positive? Emilia and I did an episode recently on the Conscious Couples podcast about, or no, we haven't done the episode yet, but we talked about it yesterday. What was the episode going to be on? Creating a safe space for vulnerability in your relationship. She was saying how a lot of times people are suppressed in their relationship and don't want to bring something up because they're afraid to lose the partner. Not because they're afraid to lose the partner, but because they're afraid to be alone. Meaning they're afraid to lose. She actually used an example of one of her friends in college. Negative example, but truthful. One of her friends in college was dating a guy, and he would always take her to dinner. And like, they'd go out all the time, and he'd pay for everything. And she like didn't like him, but like didn't want to lose the dinners. And while that also, whoever that is taking advantage, and I think, I don't agree. I don't think that's integrity personally, but people do that. You know, people are like, well, and guys and girls alike, it's like, oh, well, you've heard of these people who string people along, even though they don't want to be with them because they want to have sex still, or they don't want to be alone, or whatever it is, right? So this question helps you understand why you're staying in this negative thing. So why are you staying in this relationship, quote unquote, that you actually don't like that much? Because you're getting these other needs over here met. And so it's a very, very powerful question. So fire. So Emilia and I, this had to be 4 or 5 months ago now. Sometimes we do late night. We used to call them tea walks. Lately, we haven't been drinking tea. We've been just taking Tucker at night, summer nights, walks around our neighborhood. We have this really nice condo complex where the lighting is good. It's just awesome, honestly.
You guys take me for a walk?
What's up, man?
Take me for a walk?
Next time you come down to the old condo complex? Yeah, man, sounds good. Let's do it. So we're on the walk, and we always ask each other these really deep questions, or at least we try to. And I remember we were at this bottom of the hill part that is well lit, and it's actually nice because there's like a little pond, and the peepers are always really loud down there. Peepers, frogs. Oh. We just call them peepers.
What's a peeper?
Peepers, like a toad, frog, like they make noises, like crickets, peepers in the summer. First of all,
a cricket and a frog are two different creatures.
I know that, but they all make noises at night. That's all I'm saying. So anyways, we called them peepers. So I asked her this question. I said, sweetheart, what is the limiting belief in your life that has disguised itself as empowering? What is the limiting belief in your life that has disguised itself as empowering? One of the most powerful questions in the world, I think. I'll give you an example of one of mine that I'm contemplating lately. And I ask myself this question a lot lately. I've actually been asking that question to clients. I've been asking that question to myself. I've asked that question several times to Emilia since. What is the limiting belief that has disguised itself as empowering? And here's what I would say. When I got in that car accident at 26, for the new listeners, that's when I went really all in on self-improvement, and I found personal development essentially. Before that, I was very into achievement, but not necessarily like holistic self-improvement. And so that's when I went all in on like focusing on how do I get better as a man. And I started reading all these self-improvement books, at this point, hundreds, if not thousands. And I think that I started to believe so much in abundance that it's actually become limiting. And let me explain. I'll use finance as an example. So some people believe that resources are extremely scarce and every single dollar needs to be very meticulously invested or spent or saved. And there's truth to that. Okay, there's some truth to that. Other people just believe that money is abundant and money is everywhere and you know, it's an infinite game and you can be abundant and spend abundantly and make abundantly and abundance, abundance, abundance. And the truth, the optimal stopping problem, the drive to five, the messy middle is where I think we should live. When I started to adopt a more optimistic, abundant, infinite mindset, growth mindset, super growth mindset is what I call it now, I think that I started to believe that everything was more abundant than it actually is in the finite world. So some people believe finance is a zero-sum game. In other words, Kevin and I play poker. He has to lose for me to win. That's not actually how it works. If Kevin and I were to build a home together and we hired the best designers and the best workers, the money doesn't go away. So let's say we paid the workers. Now they get to go invest in their homes and pay, you know, their workers, and then their families all get fed, and then we still have the home, and the value of the home is increasing over time. So it's like it's not a zero-sum game. The workers don't lose for us to win. And that's not how the economy works. The economy actually works in a way where if you build a palace on the ocean and you pay all the workers who built the palace, that money doesn't go away. It goes into their families, and then you still have the palace. And as long as you take care of the palace, you know, it actually appreciates in value and gets more valuable, not less. Okay, so it is not a poker game, essentially. But what I've realized is the limiting belief that has disguised itself as empowering at this stage of my life is that my abundant mindset of there's always more than enough. David Meltzer used to talk about that all the time. I live in a world of more than enough money, more than enough love, more than enough joy, more than enough effort, more than enough. It sounds cool. And it does. It sounds cool to live in a world of more than enough. But when you allow more than enough to go too far, you aren't as strategic with the resources you do have. So imagine there's two wells and one of them has an infinite supply of water. You're going to obviously you're going to use that water much more abundantly than if you're like, oh my God, we only have a couple bottles of water and there's only five of us and we're out in the desert. So the limiting belief that has disguised itself as empowering at this stage of my life is that I think I've taken a little bit too much of the abundance mindset in certain regards. Now, don't get me wrong. Most people are overly scarce. And I want to say that statistically speaking, most people think of the economy as a zero-sum game. They think that in order for the businesses to win, they have to lose. And they're way too far on that end of the spectrum. I think that I've gone and swung the pendulum a little bit too far on the abundance side when it comes to time, effort, and money. And I think that's limiting me now at this point, even though back then I think it was empowering for a while.
What I'm going to do it. We're going to do this live right here in front of all of these people. What's mine, do you think?
Ah, very courageous of you. What is your limiting belief that you've disguised as empowering?
Don't make me regret this.
Don't. Yeah.
Take it easy.
There it is right there. Not pretending that you don't want to look bad when you really do. I'm kidding. This is an interesting question. I would say that you have the opposite of me. You believe that your finite thinking has served you more than it really has. And I believe that my infinite thinking has served me more than it really has. And that's why we work well together, because we are constantly pushing each other to the messy middle, the drive to five. For those new listeners, it really is... You know, neither one of us is ever fully right or fully wrong. We're just trying to become more optimal is essentially the theory behind the way we think. So I would say you have the opposite of me, which you've convinced yourself that finite thinking and being realistic has served you more than it really has.
I would say that's probably pretty accurate. The reason I asked is because when you posed that question, I was thinking, and it's like, it's very hard for me to.
Oh, yeah. It's difficult.
I mean, I would have to, if I sat and reflected, I'm sure it would. I'd land on something. It's hard to do it in the middle of an episode, but I figured if you were thinking about it, you probably were more primed.
It's not an easy question to answer. Yeah. That's why most people don't, myself included, we don't ask these tough questions because we feel like we don't have the time. Because it takes a lot of thought and it takes a lot of contemplation, and it's really difficult. I remember when I told this on the last episode, Kev, at the tail end of that marathon, Emilia was trying to talk to me because she was next to me doing she did the second half with me. I couldn't think. I don't want to say I couldn't think. Obviously, I could. But I'll tell you what, during the tail end of that marathon, I realized that resources are more scarce than I think. water. Dude, I literally was like, we ran out of water. We had to go to the bubbler, which I didn't want to walk an extra foot. Luckily, Amelia went for me. But I remember thinking to myself, like, that's the limiting belief. The limiting belief for me is that I think everything's so abundant when in reality it's not. My time, my effort, and my money is more valuable. Like, this water is more valuable than what I give it credit for. And you know, even the gas crisis we're going through right now, it's like people are so, and we're all guilty of this, we take it for granted until it's gone because we think it's so abundant when in reality it's like, it's not really that abundant, but it also is, right? So this is the duality of life. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Hi there. This is Dr. Taryn McCarthy, and I am the host of the Business of Happiness podcast, which would not be in existence were it not for the one and only incredible Kevin Palmieri. Seriously, I am so indebted to Kevin for the service that he provides. Every week he meets with me, he has been coaching me on how to initiate and launch this podcast. He helped me put it together with his great expertise, and every week his whole team works tirelessly to get these podcasts uploaded to Buzzsprout and to deliver my content to my audience. I am so grateful. I couldn't say enough about him. In fact, we've been working together so well. I've seen so much wonderful input from my listeners and asking me for more that in just a few weeks, we're going to be doubling the number of podcasts we produce per week. So this trajectory is just flying, and I'm really enjoying the whole process. So I couldn't say enough about him. Please, if this is something you're considering, I highly recommend him. And reach out to me anytime if you have any questions about our experience. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Do you, when you mentioned this, sometimes we don't want to ask ourselves questions because we don't think we have the time, or maybe it's because we don't feel like we have the energy. Do you ever, I'm just curious if this is a me thing, do you ever have the moment in your mind where you say like, no more, and then you push through it in terms of like your own thought process? It's a very hyper-conscious conversation we're having. I've had those moments where it's like, I don't want to think anymore. And it's like, no, keep going. You have more.
All the time.
Does that make
all
sense?
All the time. Constantly, Kev.
Can you explain that? Like what, because I don't know if I can do it, but for the listeners out there, when I get asked often, what is the number one thing that shifted? Like, what helped you the most, Kev? That's what people ask me a lot because, and this is weird for me, but like, you've made a tremendous transformation. You have a successful business and all this stuff. And at one point you were suicidal. And I'm very grateful for that. I think I've probably lost a little bit of perspective because I talk about it so much. But I always say my self-awareness, that's the biggest thing that changed, is I ask myself questions and I sit long enough to get the answer. But I think I've forgotten what it was like in the beginning to have that moment of like, I can't think about this anymore. Like I'm at a dead end, and then pushing past it and saying, well, no, there's more, there's deeper.
Yeah. That dead end is not real. That dead end is a survival mechanism of your brain and body. So even when I was walking the marathon at the tail end, the last quarter was horrible, in the hot sun, and Emilia wanted to talk, I said, babe, I love you, but I can't right now. I'm just surviving. I can't talk. Even that wasn't true. Could I have survived? I bet you I wasn't even close to death, right? I mean, closer than I've been in a while, you know, but like, you know, because I was dehydrated and all that. My lips were like so dry, like, and the sunblock, it was pretty brutal. But the point is that it's a survival mechanism. Your brain is saying, okay, we need to conserve energy because we haven't eaten or drank anything in however long. It's just survival. So almost always you can actually push through that. I'll share this with everyone quickly. If you've never done yourself this favor and you're listening to the show, you don't need to do anything. I would highly recommend that you download the book, A Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. It's a very famous book for a reason. Viktor Frankl was someone who survived concentration camps, one of them being Auschwitz, and who was mistreated beyond what any of us have most likely ever experienced. I've experienced a lot of mistreatment in my life, nothing even close to what this book, this memoir is about. And the reason why to this book, I would literally listen to like every night for like a year. And I would just go to a certain part of it. And the reason why is because I called it my level set. It would level set my mind to like everything I think is so hard really isn't that hard in comparison to Auschwitz. And it does something to your brain. It's almost like you don't really know how amazing a house on the ocean that's beautiful and taken care of is until you put it next to a shack. You don't really know how strong you are until you're around someone who's not that strong, who hasn't been lifting. So everything is contrast. And so that book was my re-level set every night. Every single night I would re-level set because quite frankly, and I'll just tell every listener this, in the beginning of this podcast journey, it was so hard because we didn't make a lot of money. No one really knew what we were. We didn't have a big brand. You know, getting listens was difficult. We were coaching for free. You know, it was definitely like, as far as an entrepreneurial journey goes, it was on the difficult end. Definitely. We've heard a lot of stories about people succeeding a lot quicker than we did. It was on the more difficult end. And so I needed that perspective of, Alan, you think your life's so hard, and it is compared to most people's lives in a statistical understanding of America, I should say, but compared to not having food and water, dude, suck it up. Seriously. Like, that's another reason why I did that marathon, Kev, is I want the level set. I need to, there are people that don't have food. And I know you think it's hard to work 12-hour days every day, but it's not hard compared to their hard. And I need that for me. I need the level set of like, you have it so good, but you forget because you haven't suffered enough. And I know that's a weird thing, but it's true. Like, I feel like true suffering it helps level set. I mean, seriously, think about this for a second, real quick, very, very fast. My grandfather, he lost both his parents at 15. He was in World War I. He put himself through night school and he worked 10-hour days and then put himself through night school at WPI, which is my alma mater as well. He was a mechanical engineer and he worked 6 days a week. And, you know, he grew up in the Great Depression and they didn't have food. Like, he didn't have parents. He had to take care of his siblings. And I just, for me, I know that I had a really hard, challenging childhood in so many ways. And I lost my father, all stuff. But in comparison, it's really not that bad. And I think that if we can just wrap our head around how hard people had it in the past, and here we are now, it's like tough to focus for 2 hours. You know, a hard day's work, like 2 hours of focused work for some of my clients is challenging. And I'm not trying to be mean. It's just, we have so much abundance and we lose sight of that. So that's kind of my answer to this whole, what's the limiting belief that's disguised itself as empowering, in my opinion, for all of us, is the abundance we all grew up in. Kevin and I grew up in the 90s. There was so much abundance and it's not real. I'm telling you, you have to be careful of what that abundance can do to you, because it can go away really quick. And if you're not equipped with the resilience you need to survive, you're going to be in trouble. You know,
I think you brought up another great question. What am I taking for granted right now?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good question. I mean, we've told the story where you reverse engineered regret for a while, and obviously you pushed it too much and you were mm-hmm. focusing too much on the negatives, but I really do believe you have moments where you'll meet someone and you can tell pretty quickly how often that person is doing introspective work and the questions that they're asking themselves.
Yeah.
You can tell pretty quickly. Tara and I went yesterday. So obviously we're recording this on Monday. I have to say that at least once a week. On Sunday, we have our date day. Excuse me. And we went to this farm. They were having a peach festival. And I was in line getting tacos for Tara and I, and I met this gentleman. He just started a conversation with me, and I'm all for conversation. But it was interesting because by the way he answered the things that we were talking about, I could tell that there wasn't a lot of, he wasn't questioning his reality often. And I don't mean that in any negative way. This is very much me just noticing.
And yeah, I don't see that as negative at all.
It's just very clear
to me too.
How? I could just
unpack it.
It was just the depth of, I think just maybe just the depth of explanation, I would say. That's
he
the
was
best
living
way
on the surface level.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, whatever, that's his choice. But it was more one of those things where it's like, if you don't ask yourself, and this is going to be like a hardcore statement, but again, heart-driven OBS. If you don't ask yourself difficult questions, you're not going to realize that you kind of suck in some ways.
Right. I know.
But you're also kind of great in other ways.
Exactly.
And I think that's, we often miss the questions that reveal the pain blind spots for us. And we often ask the questions most that give us the pleasure of like, I'm crushing it. Like, where am I crushing it right now? Here's a list of, now, also, let me put this out here. Alan and I have worked with many, many members of this community and many people in general, and their natural tendency is to go negative first. So I'm not saying that you should beat yourself up. Just make sure you're asking yourself a fair amount of questions on each side of the spectrum, because if you're only asking yourself, hey, where do I suck? You're not going to feel very good. That's going to hurt your self-worth. That's going to hurt your belief. That's going to hurt everything. If you're only saying, hey, where am I the best and do I don't need any work, then you're not going to put in the work necessary. So it is, yeah, everything is a drive to five, as we talk about so often.
Yeah, well said, man. Asking and answering tough questions is what thinking really is. Mm. And sitting with those answers and being truthful about the answers, that's what coaching is. Every client, every coaching call at this point, 1,400, I think I just surpassed, it's all asking questions. I'll share this quickly, and I know we got to go.
Yeah, we're out here, Jeff.
Kev, I was on a call recently, and I talked about how after my car accident, I went back and I talked to all my old friends, and I called an ex-girlfriend of mine who, when I was 17 years old, I met her. First name's Alyssa, and we were together for 4.5 years. And those 4.5 years, from 17 to 22 and a half, or whatever it is, 17 to 21 and a half, those are important years of growth. I mean, I was with her for the tail end of high school and for a large portion of college, and we were off and on and stuff like that. But I remember I went back after 26 and I called her and I said, what did you notice about me? Is there anything you noticed about me that... And she said, you never, ever, ever talked about your dad. I noticed that you and your whole family just pretended it didn't happen. And now here I am at 33. I talk about my dad all the time. And I know why now we didn't. Because I had a stepdad from 3 to 14. And it was a reminder that we weren't his kids. And my real last name isn't even Lazarus. My real last name is McCorkle. I'm the first non-Greek Lazarus, and probably the last, I don't know. But like, it's not my last name, it's not my birth last name, I should say. And now it is, and my mom did give me that choice. She said, do you want this last name? And I chose yes. But I was hiding from that difficult truth of my, you know, I didn't face the pain of all of that. And now I've asked the tough questions, and I went and asked her that question. If you aren't asking and answering difficult questions, you're probably not going to have a deeply meaningful, fulfilling, rich, dynamic life. Even something as simple as where am I wasting money lately? Like all of us are. You know, I bought a bunch of subs recently at Harry's that were $74. Like I didn't need to buy all that. We could have cooked at home, right? So I need to ask that. Everyone is guilty of this. No one's perfect. The question is, are you asking the tough questions? And when I was on the phone with this client, I said, it's so interesting how back then calling Alyssa and asking that tough question was so hard for me. Mm. Now it's like mirrors everywhere. You know, you and I all every single Monday, Emilia and I every night. Like, so you need the mirrors. You got to look in the mirror. Otherwise, you might end up overweight without knowing it. And in this analogy, you know, it's like one of the reasons Hollywood actors are usually statistically in such good shape is because they're on camera so often. You know, and when you're on camera a lot, you're getting feedback so often. So you got to ask for feedback. And that's what asking questions are. It's getting feedback.
Yeah. And it gives you the opportunity to make a change.
Exactly.
It gives you the opportunity and necessity and awareness to make a change. And last thing before we head out, don't look at the fact that I said, hey, Alan, what are my biggest Jeffings on air as your measurement for whether or not you're asking hard questions? Because that's not hard for me. At this point, Alan and I have done that so many times. And I also have an understanding that whatever he says is going to help me in some way, shape, or form. So that's an important understanding too. Don't compare your questions necessarily to the questions we're asking ourselves, because maybe we've been asking ourselves questions for longer or in a different way, or maybe we have more belief or more self-worth, whatever. So that's another important thing as well when it comes to the spectrum.
And be careful who you ask as well.
Definitely.
You got to make sure they have the awareness to where their answers will actually be valuable. So
100%. Next Level Nation, if you are a podcaster or if you want to become a podcaster, I will ask you many questions that will help raise your awareness to why you're not starting your podcast, why you're not doing as well as you want, or why you're not enjoying the process as much as you could. I am doing free 30-minute calls with members of Next Level Nation. We will have my link in the show notes. I'm not going to try to sell you on anything. There's no strings attached. And after 1,068 podcast episodes, I like to believe I know a thing or two. But at the end of the day, my goal is to just add value to you and get you from where you are to the next step. You're not going to go from where you are to where we are. That's not the goal. The goal is to raise your awareness so you can get a little bit better. And that's what that call is all about.
If Kevin learned at least one thing from every failure we've had, we have at least 1,068 things he knows. Mm-hmm. So that's good. So it was circa 2022.
I've heard of it. I've heard of that time.
I actually think it was the end of 2021 where we started doing monthly meetups. They are private sessions on Zoom with Kevin and myself, where we dig deep. It's more of like a training, but it's an engaging training. So this month's topic is how to build your self-belief and self-worth. I think they're sort of inversely correlated, but we can all get to a place where we build them both once we understand them. September 1st, 2022 starts at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's on the banner. You can click a link in the show notes. It will register you. It'll add to your calendar, and we hope that you join us. They are very engaging. They are definitely a deep mosaic of perspectives where everyone gets to share their own sort of perspective so that you can understand things at the highest level from a holistic perspective. So join us. Monthly meetup number 9. This is our 9th one. Mm-hmm. So hopefully by now we're getting pretty good.
A deep mosaic, he says. Very well said.
Thanks, man.
I like that. I'm going to use that.
Emilia uses mosaic, so I've been picking it up from her. Yeah.
I like it. Very powerful words. Very eloquent. Eloquent vernacular.
Ooh. Ooh.
Pretty good.
You're so smart.
Yeah, I've been working. Next Level Nation, tomorrow for episode number 1069, not everyone will recognize your growth. That can be one of the hardest parts of growth, is not everybody knows you're doing it. Not everybody recognizes it. And unfortunately, not everyone appreciates it. So we will talk about that. As always, we love you. We appreciate you. Grateful for each and every one of you. And at NLU, we don't have fans. We have family. We will talk to you all tomorrow.
Please reach out.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Next Level University. We love connecting with the Next Level family, so make sure you follow us on Instagram. I am at NeverQuitKid and Alan is at ALazarus88.
Also, if you found value in this episode, leave us a review using the link in the show notes, and please share this with someone who's ready to get to the next level.
We will talk to you tomorrow.